Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I am your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and indigenous issues with guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. This evening, I am very pleased to welcome two guests, Chris Dorsett, Vice President of Conservation with the Ocean Conservancy, and Kelsey Lamp, Director, Protect Our Oceans Campaign with Environment America. Our discussion focuses on the recent United Nations Ocean Conference held in Nice, France, in particular, the issues, outcomes, and why they matter. So, Chris, let's begin with you. You are with a major nonprofit organization, the Ocean Conservancy. If you could give us a brief description of the organization and your role.
Absolutely. Well, first off, thank you for having me, and it's really a pleasure to be here. So Ocean Conservancy was established in 1972, and we work to protect the ocean from today's greatest global challenges. We create evidence-based solutions for a healthy ocean and the wildlife and communities that depend upon it. My role at the Ocean Conservancy is working with a number of teams focused on developing and implementing solutions that deliver sustainable fisheries, address lost, abandoned, and discarded fishing gear, or otherwise known as ghost gear, and also deep sea conservation initiatives. Our work is very much centered on partnerships. We work with a variety of actors, including government decision makers, academics, fishermen, and the public to craft and implement solutions that deliver tangible results for the ocean and those that depend upon it.
Mm-hmm. And so our primary discussion point is the third United Nations Ocean Conference, which was just held this past June. So obviously an ocean conference would deal with the oceans. However, what were your specific interests?
Yeah, so this is a really important global gathering to really bring attention to and focus upon actions that can improve ocean health. From Ocean Conservancy's vantage point, we were very much focused on raising awareness and building support for actions to protect the Arctic, as well as an area of the ocean known as the Ocean Twilight Zone, which is a deeper part of the ocean that really has an outsized impact on the health of the ocean and those that depend upon it. We also were there to help solidify action for addressing abandoned, lost, and discarded fishing gear, and then finally to accelerate action on ocean-based climate solutions, such as renewable sources of energy from the ocean.
Before we go on with the Ocean Twilight Zone, because that's my primary interest, do you want to mention anything about the Arctic issue?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, with changing weather conditions and a warming planet, the Arctic is an ecosystem that's particularly at risk right now. We have a major program at the Ocean Conservancy that is focused on working with indigenous communities, as well as government decision makers, academics, and industry to really call attention to the needs that exist in the Arctic and drive action to protect resources that are so important to not only folks in the region, but globally. So, for example, Alaska is by far the largest source of seafood in the United States, and the Arctic serves as essentially an air conditioner for the planet.
Mm-hmm. And so what kinds of activities are you finding up in the Arctic? Like what's actually transpiring?
Yeah, so with the retreat in sea ice, essentially ice that's melting, there are issues with areas that were currently or were historically inaccessible now being able to be accessed by fishing operations. New shipping lanes have opened, and this just creates a busier Arctic. Some of the work that we do there is focused on getting out ahead of these emerging uses and to put mechanisms in place so we can really think long and hard about what are appropriate uses, what are sustainable uses, and have that determined before people just go in with a gold rush mentality in those particular areas.
So is it mostly overfishing?
That is definitely a concern, but it's also where shipping is taking place, which can have impacts for marine wildlife as well.
Okay. So let's have our discussion on the ocean twilight zone. So there's a critical need to protect the area, but can you describe what it is, where it is, and why it's so important? What are the current issues? Basically, tell us everything.
Absolutely. So the ocean twilight zone, it's an area of the ocean that's between 600 and 3,000 feet below the surface. And it's an area of the ocean where light really begins to filter out and it goes to complete darkness in the deeper parts of the ocean. So over the past, I'd say, decade in particular, there have been a number of important scientific initiatives that have really shed light on the importance of this area. One such is the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution's Ocean Twilight Zone Initiative, which was a roughly 10-year effort to better understand this area. And while this part of the ocean is only about 20% by volume, it's really of outsized importance for ocean health and also regulating the planet's climate. First, by some estimates, it's thought to be home of upwards of 90% of the fish biomass on the planet, which is, you know, I've been doing this work for a long time, and that was absolutely, that stat absolutely blew me away. And the other really important aspect of this area is that many of those animals that live in this part of the ocean take part in the largest migration of animals on the planet. It happens on a daily basis. So what happens is these animals move into the upper water column at night to feed and then return back to the safety of the ocean twilight zone to depth during the day for refuge. When they do that, they essentially transport 2 to 6 gigatons of carbon from the ocean surface down to depth. So this is a really important part of the ocean's ability to absorb carbon and help regulate the planet's climate. And 2 to 6 gigatons is a lot, just to give everyone a sense of what that equates to. It's about twice the annual amount of global car emissions.
Wow.
In addition, mesopelagic animals are incredibly important food source for whales, sharks, seabirds, and many important fish species like tuna, swordfish, and salmon. In fact, many species of tuna get over 50% of the food that they eat from the ocean twilight zone. And then finally, it's just an incredible source of biodiversity. There are animals that have adapted to these harsh conditions. Some of these animals, for example, produce their own sources of light, given the low light conditions in the area.
Mm-hmm. So where is it exactly?
Yeah, it's across the entire ocean, starting at 600 feet deep, and then it extends down to 3,000 feet below the ocean surface. It's found all over the world, so in every country's exclusive economic zone, there are parts of that ocean where the ocean twilight zone exists. In addition, a lot of it is on the high seas, so outside of the 200-mile exclusive economic zones of countries is the high seas, kind of a global commons where everyone is part owner of those waters. And there is a lot of the ocean twilight zone that exists in that high seas area.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the major issues, or what's one of the major issues that the conference had discussed in trying to protect it?
Yeah, so there's two big issues right now that will have ramifications on the health of the ocean twilight zone and these important services it provides, including climate regulation and a food source for other marine life. The first is that, as you can imagine, with it being home to an estimated over 90% of the fish biomass on the planet, it's attracted a lot of attention from fishing interests who want to develop new sources of fish meal and fish oil. So fish meal and fish oil typically is used in things like pet food or feed for marine species that are grown as part of aquaculture operations. And then fish oils are used in, like, supplements, things like, you know, fish oil pills and the like. There have been efforts to develop these fisheries. Right now, they're not economically viable at scale, but if we know anything from the history of fisheries, where there's a will, there's a way, and it will get figured out. So what we want to do right now is put a precautionary pause in place on any fishing operations or other activities that could influence the ocean twilight zone until we have a better understanding of how those uses can be done in a way that does not disrupt the important climate regulation services and role in the ecosystem that this area provides. And then the second big issue is there have been a lot of conversation recently about deep sea mining, so mining for critical minerals in the ocean. And through some scientific investigations, they've shown that plumes that would be released from these mining operations at the bottom of the sea would make it up into the depths where the ocean twilight zone is located and would have impacts on those species.
Mm. And there are no regulations to protect it?
Currently, there are not many in place right now. There are a few areas of the world where there are some protections in place. So, for example, off the coast of New Jersey and in neighboring states, there actually were some measures put in place to protect many of these species that live in the ocean twilight zone because of their importance as a food source for fisheries that are important in the mid-Atlantic region. So this is one small area, but provides a nice example of how protections can be implemented in a precautionary manner.
So are there things that the average person can do to promote protection of this particular area?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing is, this is an area that is largely out of sight, out of mind. When we've been engaged in conversations with participants at big conferences like the UN Ocean Conference or our Ocean Conference, it's largely unknown except to scientists. And so doing things like sharing these stories and building that awareness about its importance is absolutely essential. And the second part is all marine resources essentially belong to all of us. In the United States, these resources are managed for the benefit of the entire nation. So no matter if you live in Kansas or you live in Florida, you have an equal say in decisions that involve the health of these resources and the health of the ocean. And so engaging in Ocean Conservancy has a number of resources to alert the public as to when there are important opportunities to weigh in with decision makers so that you can get engaged in decisions that are impacting ocean health, and you can let your decision maker know how important the ocean is to you. And then in terms of our daily lives, there are resources out there that help you identify and be able to select sustainable sources of fish when you're at restaurants or at the supermarket. And then things like single-use plastics, really eliminating use of those in your daily life. Plastic pollution is an incredibly important issue right now in terms of the overall health of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. So if listeners would like some additional information on this and other related topics, where can they go?
They can go to our website, which is www.oceanconservancy.org, where you can learn more about the work that we do on a variety of ocean topics, as well as ways that you can get engaged in making sure that the ocean is healthy for generations to come.
Well, my guest has been Chris Dorsett, Vice President of Conservation with the Ocean Conservancy. Thank you so much for this very enlightening conversation.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Elchart Chronicles. Let's take a short break. Do stay tuned.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Elchar Chronicles. Prior to the break, Chris Dorsett with the Ocean Conservancy spoke to the necessity of protecting the ocean twilight zone, one of the issues addressed at the recent United Nations Third Ocean Conference. Well, I'm pleased to welcome my second guest, Kelsey Lamp, Director, Protect Our Oceans Campaign with Environment America, and she's based out of Boston. Thank you for joining us, Kelsey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So could you please give a brief description of your organization, Environment America, and a little bit more about your role?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure that some of your listeners are very familiar with our Pennsylvania affiliate, Penn Environment. Environment America is Penn Environment's national office. And we are a policy and action group with one mission: to protect and restore the natural world. So we investigate problems, craft solutions, educate the public and decision makers, and help people make their voices heard. And then as the Oceans Campaign Director, my job is to connect people here in the U.S. who care about the ocean with opportunities to make their voices heard as leaders at the corporate, national, state, or local level are making decisions that affect the health of the ocean.
And so you also attended the third United Nations Ocean Conference held in France. As we heard previously, Chris Dorsett from the Ocean Conservancy, his primary interest was the ocean twilight zone. So what were your specific interests in attending the conference? And then we'll talk about the takeaways after we hear about all your interests.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being at the UN Ocean Conference was a great opportunity to meet with scientists, conservationists, and leaders from around the world who are developing and trying out new ways to help the ocean, whether that's through cutting-edge research, new community conservation initiatives, or through passing new laws and policies. So being there was a great way to not only share some of the work that's happening here in the United States, but also to hear about new ways that we can actually, here in the U.S., help protect the ocean. And there were a lot of inspiring ideas that I heard. One that I particularly stands out was called the Posidonia Soundscapes Initiative. It's bringing together musicians and marine scientists working to conserve a seagrass common in the Mediterranean. And it actually stems from a way that marine scientists actually do a bunch of their research. One of the best ways to learn about an ocean ecosystem is by recording it. It allows you to hear what animals are communicating in the area, making sounds, so you get a sense of what species live there, how many of them there are, and how healthy overall the ecosystem is. And so scientists have all of these recordings, and this initiative is actually giving DJs who go to Ibiza access to these acoustic monitoring recordings that they'd made in some of these really healthy areas of seagrass so that those DJs can create music with the recordings of healthy ocean areas. And I thought this was a great way to bring the life below the surface not only to our attention, but to our ears.
So they're recording, making music with it in essence, and then broadcasting. So how do people find out about that?
Yeah, I think that this is such a cool idea. I know that the organizers of this initiative are planning on bringing these to community events and festivals, and I think right now you can find some of the recordings online through their website.
Well, it's a real creative way of bringing attention, as you mentioned. So what other types of things did you hear?
I mean, I think one of the themes that I took away from the conference was how far human actions are reaching into the wide open ocean. Mm. I attended a talk where Dr. Diva Aman, who studies the deep sea, recalled that during one of her deep sea dives, the crew was stunned to find a field of washing machines and appliances just sitting on the ocean floor.
Oh, my gosh.
Filled from, yeah, just, you know, littering the ocean floor spilled from a shipping container that had fallen overboard. And she described that this part of the seafloor that they were looking at was remote and had never really been seen before by human eyes until they had taken their remote operated vehicle, this, you know, little robot, down to the ocean. They were the first humans to ever see this place. And yet, even before we'd ever seen it, our actions were impacting this part of the ocean mm-hmm. through our trash.
So where was that located? Do you recall?
I don't recall.
Now, just because we also heard from Chris earlier regarding, you know, the ocean twilight zone and some of the things that they're finding there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We're permeating everywhere, apparently. So what kinds of solutions, it's probably not the right word, but what kinds of activities can people undertake besides, you know, being careful of throwing, like, plastic is always a big thing, but did they give recommendations at the conference on not solutions, but actions that the average person can take?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are a lot of ways that people can take action in their own communities. You've mentioned, you know, on a personal level, making sure that you're careful not to let any of your plastic waste get into the trash, but also working with folks like our partners at Penn Environment to help reduce the total amount of plastic waste or pollution that's entering waterways all across Pennsylvania and across the country. This type of advocacy is really important because pollution that enters a river, even, you know, all the way inland in Pennsylvania, will eventually exit into the ocean and have an impact on ocean life.
Mm-hmm.
So water quality was definitely a theme of the conference, as was, you know, tackling plastic pollution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since you mention it here in the Lehigh Valley, so of course we're three major cities, Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, and we're about 60 miles north of Philadelphia, and our Lehigh River, as you so aptly described, the Lehigh River flows ultimately into the Atlantic Ocean, and now it's summertime. We have a lot of Lehigh Valley folks who go down to the Jersey Shore. Not exactly Philly, but it's close enough. But they go down, and that's, you know, obviously the Atlantic Ocean. So people need to be relatively careful. So are there other activities that occurred at the Ocean Conference that you might like to mention?
I mean, I think there were a ton of commitments that different countries made around ocean health, whether that was protecting particularly important parts of their ocean, you know, committing to tackling particularly harmful fishing practices or those types of things. But I think I was reminded just being there of how important it is for us all to come together and keep fighting for the best possible future for our ocean. And there are actually a couple of ways that, you know, coming out of the conference, I think that I've, you know, been reinvigorated in my work. And there are a few ways that people here in the U.S. can actually take action now to help protect some of the ocean, particularly some of the whales and other marine mammals you might see off the Jersey Shore if you head out there this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, you know, for the past half century, all of our whales have been protected by a law called the Marine Mammal Protection Act. This law was set up to help whales and all other marine mammals, including seals and sea lions, but also other animals like manatees or sea otters, recover from population lows caused by whaling and hunting and other problems, but also to stay healthy well into the future. So if you look out from the Jersey Shore and see a whale off the coast this summer, that was in large part thanks to the work of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. But unfortunately, right now, there's a discussion happening in Congress to really weaken the core protections provided by the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And if we do this, it could spell disaster for whales and other ocean life. You know, it's been pretty successful so far. None of the marine mammals in the U.S. protected by the act have gone extinct yet. But as our industries push into deeper and deeper waters, and as human activities increase across the ocean, as our trash piles up in the ocean, we need tools to help us protect and help our whales, our dolphins, and our other marine mammals. So folks want to take action to help protect the ocean and bring that spirit of the UN Ocean Conference back to the U.S., they can call their member of Congress and tell them to protect the Marine Mammal Protection Act to keep those whales and other animals healthy.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned you're the parent company of Penn Environment, and yes, mm-hmm. our listeners are quite familiar with Penn Environment. They've been our guests yeah. on several occasions. So is that also something they can, our listeners can go back to Penn Environment and work with them yeah. as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, Penn Environment does great state-level advocacy for, you know, getting plastic out of our waterways, working to keep pollution out of our waterways. And then, you know, Penn Environment works closely with me when it comes to protecting our oceans, because while Pennsylvania is obviously not a coastal state, as you mentioned, folks from Pennsylvania love to go to the ocean, and, you know, the oceans are an important part of our global ecosystem, something that we should be protecting for all of us, for all of our futures. And so, you know, folks who are taking action with Penn Environment on a, you know, state bill to keep plastic out of our waterways can also work with me on any issues to help protect our ocean across the country and around the world.
Mm-hmm. So how would people get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, you can check out our website, which is environmentamerica.org. We have a bunch of different actions on our website, and you can also find Penn Environment's site linked there in our States tab.
Hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to mention vis-a-vis the Ocean Conference or your own activities?
Yeah, I think it's something that always inspires me and touches me to see how much people love the ocean. You know, when in France, this was, I think, one of the first times that the public was welcomed into some of the formal event space, and seeing kids enter some of the displays that had been set up by different organizations. Particularly, there was this pavilion showing some of the deep sea life that I'm sure Chris was talking about, the crazy and cool jellies and mm-hmm. all of the strange fish. And just seeing the wonder on their faces is a great reminder of why I do the work I do. The ocean is so full of amazing life, and it's part of what inspires me to keep doing this work. It's also important for people who feel that inspiration to make their voices heard, because only together will we be able to save the ocean.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my guest has been Kelsey Lamp, Director, Protect Our Oceans Campaign with Environment America. Thank you for your work, and I wish you much continued success.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is Karen Elchar. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to WDIY, and we'll see you next time on the Elchar Chronicles.